and welcome to School Sucks Live. If you want to give us a call, you can. The number is 1-843 join SSP. You can also Skype in School Sucks Live, all one word. We'll take your call on any education topic that's on your mind. With me tonight, Corey. Corey, how you doing?
Good, good. How are you?
I'm glad you're back.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back.
And Osborne.
Hey, dude.
Hey.
How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
Excellent.
So, what's new? What's going on?
I registered my car today.
How was that? Is that easy to do?
If you have a lot of money, it is.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was $1,200.
Oh, for a new car?
Yeah.
Yeah, because
it's New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that goes to the state.
Who knows?
Yeah,
it goes somewhere. But anyway, it's hilarious because they completely incentivize people to drive old, crappy cars, which are falling apart. So then they have this inspection system, right, where they charge you $50 every year to get your car inspected to make sure it's roadworthy, at which time they tell you that it isn't. And someone who's part of the mechanic lobbying group gets to make a bunch of money off of you to make your car supposedly roadworthy again.
Wow. Corey's looking at you and me like amateurs.
Horrible.
I'm from New Jersey.
No, I mean that cost for a new car registration, that's I thought New Jersey's was bad and where it's $250, but
yeah.
Holy cow.
No. And they do that to you every year. It goes down slightly every year. So next year it'll be $1,000. The year after that it'll be $800. And the year after that, $600.
Because it's based on the price of the car. So a brand new car is very expensive, but after a couple of years, I mean, you drive a car off the lot, the value goes down $2,000.
Right.
So the depreciation over time makes the registration cheaper. Now, the other trick with these inspections is that somebody at some point added this thing called an emissions test.
Mm.
So don't worry about the state trooper's emissions when he's driving a Dodge Charger
right.
parked in the highway median for 7 hours of his 8-hour shift running with the air conditioning on. His emissions are fine.
Uh-huh.
But I had a Volkswagen Passat. Right now, these German cars are not really, once they get a few years old, mine was like a 2001. They start having computer problems, right? So the engine codes will go off, and if any of these things happen, it fails the emissions test. So the car could just never pass an emissions test, and I could never have a real inspection sticker, and I had to drive around without one.
Ooh, how'd that go for you?
It went okay. It wasn't the best, you know? It could have gone better. Like, I got pulled over here and there. I got a couple tickets for it, but eventually I just wound up getting rid of the car. I got a 2006 Nissan Altima.
Mm.
And that's a fine car. I mean, you know, they don't have a lot of the problems that the Volkswagens do. It's not as nice of a car, but it's more reliable. It's better on gas. So I did the right thing, I think.
And while I was there, I also signed up to be a delegate to the Republican State Convention.
Now, what is all that about?
I have no idea.
That sounds even more confusing than the first topic.
Yeah, so there's this one day where they have this convention. I believe it's in September.
Yeah.
And everyone who signs up, evidently you have to be elected, but not enough people sign up
mm-hmm.
to fill all the slots. So you're kind of automatically in.
Yeah.
So you show up and then the people who show up decide what the Republican Party platform is for that year.
For the state?
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, does this have anything to do with the election? I don't.
Not really. No, it's just, you know how the party has a platform,
mm-hmm.
which I guess are a series of talking points and whatnot.
Yeah.
So, and that's what the convention does. So hopefully other people who are crazy anarchists like me will show up and have all kinds of interesting items to add to the platform.
What do you think you'll add to it? What would you like to see in the Republican platform?
Oh, I don't know.
How about the abolition of the Republican Party? How do you think that would go?
Yeah, that might go. Secession, that might be a good one.
I don't like secession. I don't like that idea. I don't like that talk of secession.
No?
No.
Yeah, I just, okay. To me, I think it leads to is tanks driving down Main Street.
I agree. And it immediately makes people think of just the association. Like, we don't want to say, like, people shy away from the word anarchism because of all the connotations of that. But then at the same time, the secession thing, doesn't that make you picture like Southern planters and slavery?
So
maybe you picture Tiananmen Square.
Maybe a different word. Maybe a friendlier word. Like,
opting out.
Opt out. leaving.
Yeah.
Doing your own thing. I don't know.
But
not taking your calls anymore.
But it's not. But it doesn't. It doesn't make any sense because as a state couldn't do that. You know, because like not everyone would ever agree. You know, 100% to do that. So we would be. It would be imposed on somebody, right? It would probably be imposed on most people. Most people would not want to do that.
Yeah.
Most people like the United States. You know, who are, you know, the ordinary folks.
Yeah. Yeah. Or how about marijuana decriminalization? That would be fun. To okay. have on a Republican Party platform, right?
Yes.
Because mm-hmm. Republicans aren't known for that.
Mm-hmm. More and more talk about it, but sure. Didn't they just get real close again in New Hampshire and the governor just vetoes it?
I don't know if he has vetoed it or not.
But he will. Yet.
But that wasn't a marijuana decrim. That was
that's just medical.
Medical for very specific, you have to be dying.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you can't get it.
Mm. Well, that sounds like a good day.
And I'm sure if people are dying, the laws aren't really stopping them.
Yeah, from getting it. I'm sorry. I inserted my comment there kind of awkwardly. Not the dying part. Your day sounds like a good day. I mean, productivity-wise. You know sure. that feeling? I was just talking to somebody about this yesterday, and I'm always ashamed of myself when this happens. You do one of these things that the state makes you do, like you have to pay them money and fill out a permission slip to use your own property. And you actually leave that engagement feeling like accomplishment. Have you ever felt that? Like, yes, I've done it.
No, it's more like a relief that it's over. Like, you know, if you're preparing to be, you know, for a hot lead enema. Right. And,
yep.
and you're just you kind of not wanting it to happen. Right.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But then it's over. The pain is gone. Then maybe you might feel some relief.
It's especially terrible when there it's the prospect of a hot lead enema and nothing good comes of it. Because sometimes you go, you know, to ask for, you know, to fill out your permission slip and they say, no, you can't. And you went through all of it anyway and you got nothing out of it. And so if you go back for a repeat and you get what you wanted in the first place, you know, you become so grateful that you know that it's over that you might even thank them on the way out.
Yeah, I think that's the feeling because like especially with this inspection thing, that was like a really difficult thing for me to have to deal with. So when it was finally done, right? When or when I was holding the sticker and slapping the registration sticker on my car, it was actually I stopped myself mid like a celebration and was like, "Brett, shame on you for being happy about this," you know? I felt like a kind of a slave. But there is that little feeling of satisfaction that comes.
It reminds me of earlier this week when I spent 2 days in the DMV trying to get a driver's license.
What was the holdup?
That was the first time was just waiting in line. It wasn't all day, but it was about 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And when I finally got to the line, they told me that I couldn't have a driver's license because my social security card is too old.
Mm.
So then I had to go back and do the same game the next day.
So does everybody have that same problem? Because like, don't you get your social security card when you're very young?
Maybe people keep it in better condition than I do or something.
Mine, but,
they have to scan it and the computer has to be able to detect some security features or whatnot that are on the card.
Yeah, I don't even know what's holding mine together.
Huh?
You know, it's really like in rough shape. It doesn't have corners anymore. It's very faded. Yeah. Actually, I don't even know where it is anymore.
And they don't let you laminate it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, that is against the law. You cannot laminate your social security card.
You got to put it in like a sleeve, like you did with Ken Griffey Jr.'s rookie card.
Hmm.
That's a great idea.
You could probably take Ken Griffey Jr.'s rookie card out, throw it away. It's worth a dollar now, probably.
Hmm. He was a Mariner, correct?
Baseball cards. He was a Mariner and a Red.
Hmm.
He was the son of Ken Griffey.
Really?
Who also played well? Ken Griffey was a big deal in Boston because you know the Reds in the 70s were rivals of the Red Sox. But we want to take your calls. 1-843 join SSP. Bring up an educational topic of your choice. We will be back in just a couple minutes. This is School Sucks Live. everybody. This is Brett, and welcome back to School Sucks Live. Today's, I don't know, like June 14th, 2012, I want to say.
It is Flag Day.
Happy Flag Day.
Likewise, sir.
Thank you.
With me tonight, Corey and Osborne, and we're about to get into what I'm going to call MathCast, a podcast about math, where you can call in and talk about, you know, whatever math issues you have, whatever math questions you have. Like, maybe you want to call in and say, Corey, what's the nine times seven, you know, and Corey can answer that question for you.
Yeah. And do you want to know?
Be exciting.
No, let's not. Well, sure.
Yeah. Well, we'll reveal it after the next break.
Absolutely.
That way people will make sure to stay tuned.
I will tell you right now that the square root of 20 is 2 root 5. Right. So that has a radical in it. So this is amazing. Math. This is the kind of thing that we're talking about. And MathCast is where we just do a show about math. It's one of Osborne's favorite topics. I hated math pretty much my whole life.
I did not. I loved it forever.
Really?
Oh, yeah. But when I was a kid, I would sit and do math all day long. Because it's like puzzles. It's games.
Absolutely. Almost. Yeah. You know, I was explaining this to an 11-year-old today. This girl I've been tutoring. She actually lives right around the corner. She's a Free Stater. And she's got a business that she's going to be doing at Pork Fest, walking dogs.
Awesome.
So we've been doing some really cool stuff together. I helped her make flyers for her to hang up at Pork Fest, little cards to hand out. Woo-hoo. Dale, whose studio we're in, Dale Everett, the host of Flaming Freedom, he was an actor in a video that we made, a little commercial we made for the dog walking company. And we did it in the style of, you know, those infomercials, they're like commercial infomercials where you just see these people, they take them out of like assisted living for regular age people homes. Yeah. Where they just are functionally illiterate and they
don't know how blankets work.
Exactly. Yeah. They certainly don't know how a hose works.
Blankets are confusing.
Yeah. And they say, aren't you tired of trying to do a thing that a 6-year-old could do, but you're an idiot and you can't do it. So Dale and I make a commercial for her while she's narrating it in the style, like me all tangled up in the leash and, you know, having a hard time with the dogs. And she offers this service at Pork Fest. So very cool experience. I worked with this girl for about a month. So when I was first pitching ideas to her and her mom, you know, I was like, oh, we could do this and I could show her how to make videos, or, you know, we could record something, or does she have any musical interest? Does she have any artistic interest? Because you think unschooling that these are the kinds of things that kids would want to do. But, you know, that's me kind of applying my own expectations to it. Mm. Because what she said to me, what she wanted to do was math.
Nice.
Now, she hasn't been in school that much. Very little public school, hardly any at all. But she was worried that as a fifth grader, her math skills are below where they should be for her age. Now, I tried to say, you know, it doesn't really matter. You know, I think there's math skills that you need, but to say at this age your math skills have to be this, I don't think that's necessarily true. But
not outside of public school, it's not.
Oh, absolutely. I think that those are where they set these arbitrary, you know, mm-hmm. by this age, you should be able to do this. And certainly at a certain age, a kid could be maybe behind that because that's not an interest that they're ready to pursue at that time. But at the same time, they could be way ahead of that. They could be just there, but not everybody could be. It doesn't make any sense. Right. Like the dumbest idea I can think of is to put a bunch of kids from different backgrounds with different strengths and different needs in a room with one person who's in charge of teaching them and have them do all the same stuff at the same pace. Hmm. That's a silly idea.
It is the worst idea.
And we were able to do, I'm estimating here, I would say we were able to cover about 2+ years of math curriculum as far as concepts are concerned.
In a week?
In a little over 2 weeks.
Nice.
Using a website, a self-teaching tool called Khan Academy that I think a lot of people are familiar with. Now, Khan Academy is a fantastic resource for people to learn math at their own pace, but there's other subjects too. There's science subjects, social science. I think there might even be some economic stuff. I don't know what that's like.
Mm.
But there are a lot of lessons in these modules where you can do sample problems. And if you get stuck, if you don't understand what you're looking at, there's a little video that Salman Khan made, and you can watch the video, and he explains it. Videos are very simple. He just does it on one of those tablets, you know, like that looks like an electric chalkboard. And he explains what you need to do. And, you know, we were able to cruise through that, like I said, 2+ years of math in a few weeks. and she understood everything. And I saw just this 11-year-old girl who would be a fifth grader doing, what are they doing in the fifth grade in public school? Maybe division. Division may be the basic
big
of
long numbers, and you have to sit and do all the tedious
long division.
Yeah. You know, and she knew how to do that. And I was like, use a calculator.
Yeah.
I was like, do you know how to do it? Like, we don't have to do them all out. If you know how to do it, it's a nice skill to have, but let's get the crackulators out.
Yeah.
That's what the kids that I used to teach, the juvenile delinquents I used to teach, they called them crackulators.
Nice. Now, my big problem with how they teach math in school is that all they're doing is beating algorithms into the kids' heads without actually explaining to them the concepts behind what is being done. How does the Khan Academy compare to that?
Well, that's been one of the criticisms, and we're going to get into it. I have a couple articles about it, but people say that it is pretty much the same method that's being used. You know, like something he explains, and maybe we could even set it up that later in the show, I can play you some audio from one of the videos, and we can talk about it. Do we like this? Do we not like this? Might be good for some, might not be good for others. It certainly might not be for everybody, you know? But I think that one of the criticisms is that he was using a lot of the same instructional methods that are used in schools. But what's great about it is that if kids just have this setup instead of the whole let's, you know, fit into your rows and work at the same pace setup, they have the flexibility to just shoot far beyond the class. Now, remember, school takes so long because people need jobs.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because
they need to keep other people from getting into the workforce to take those jobs.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the idea that public school lasts 12 years, I mean, how many years of usable skills are in those 12 years? I don't know if it's even one, maybe two.
No.
Maybe you could learn all of that stuff in 2 years. Like you don't start when somebody's six, you know, but 8, 10, and they go to school for a year or two. I think that would be sufficient. But that's not a good jobs project for people who are some people who might be very talented, but a lot of people, especially because of the time they spend in that environment, and after years of being in that environment and being protected by those unions, they become pretty useless, from my experience anyway. But you know, I think that that's what makes Khan a good resource, and that everybody can work at their own pace. And I saw how successful it was for this student because she had an interest in math. Now, if somebody's not interested in math, Khan is useless.
right.
So she had goals of what she wanted to achieve.
That might not be true, right? Because maybe it's an easier way to get through the stuff you don't actually want to do.
Absolutely.
I don't know.
We're going to continue talking about Khan Academy. This is School Sucks Live. We'd like to hear your thoughts. 843, join SSP. We'll be right back. Everybody, welcome back to School Sucks Live. I'm Brett. With me tonight, Corey and Osborne. We've been talking about math. We will answer all of your questions about math. We have mathematician here, Osborne, right? Corey, you're not bad at math.
Not bad is a great way to describe it, yes.
You think you're...
I'm pretty good at math. I'm just not super fast.
Yeah. And I'm a good math tutor, but I don't have super advanced... I don't have any... what did Napoleon Dynamite call them? Special skills?
Skills.
Yeah, I don't have any good skills. But you know, I mean, I know all the basics and I know how to explain them to other people in I think digestible ways. So, yeah, we are a math team, basically, here.
Yeah, if you have mathletes.
Yes. I like that.
This was not part of the show prep.
I think that we just might have a spinoff podcast here. Mathletes. But, you know, this is the longest that we've gone in the history of this live show without a caller. So we'd love to hear from you. 843-JOIN-SSP. You can also Skype in at School Sucks Live, all one word. You are probably listening to us on LRN.FM. We stream there every Thursday if you're brand new and you know, don't know what this is. Every Thursday, 10 p.m. to midnight. But We are also streaming as video at schoolsucksproject.com/live. And the show continues after midnight with the After School Sucks special, where we open it up. We move beyond educational topics. We can still talk about educational issues if you have something that you want to bring up. But that anything goes after midnight on this show. So we usually go till about 1 o'clock. And if that's when you'd like to participate, please give us a call then. But yeah, we've been talking about Khan Academy, which is a tool for self-teachers. And I want to just get into an article here from Wired Magazine. It's called How Khan Academy is Changing the Rules of Education by Clive Thompson. This is from about a year ago. That was when people first started sending me articles about Khan, and I started looking into it and played around with it a little bit. And I thought it was a pretty good resource. But of course, it's useless if you don't already have a math interest that's driving you to get into this stuff. So it begins. This, says Matthew Carpenter, is my favorite exercise. I peer over his shoulder at his laptop screen to see the math problem the fifth grader is pondering. It's an inverse trigonometric function. Carpenter, a serious-faced 10-year-old wearing a gray t-shirt and an impressive black digital watch,
awesome,
pauses for a second, fidgets, then clicks on 0 degrees. Presto, the computer tells him that he's correct. The software then generates another problem, followed by another and yet another, until he's nailed 10 in a row in just a few minutes. All told, he's done an insane 642 inverse trigonometric problems. Well, it took me a while to get it, he admits sheepishly. Carpenter, who attends Santa Rita Elementary, a public school in Los Altos, California, couldn't be doing work anywhere near this advanced. Shouldn't be doing work anywhere near this advanced. In fact, when I visited his class this spring in a sun-drenched room festooned with a papercraft X-Wing fighter and student paintings of trees, the kids were supposed to be learning basic fractions, decimals, and percentages. As his teacher, Cammy Thompson, explains, students don't normally tackle inverse trig until high school, and sometimes not even then. So this was another thing that I liked about Khan, was this sense of accomplishment that it provides, because you can see, like, very, very quickly, you can see your progress and you can see your mastery of something. Mm-hmm. So, like, even though it's using a lot of the same processes that we're used to in school, like, here, do a bunch of these problems that relate to these things, sometimes it can even be a little bit repetitive. Mm-hmm. But if you can get them all right, it shows you your mastery of that, and then it generates new things. Like, okay, you mastered this, move on to this.
Yeah, well, and you can blast through it.
Yeah.
As opposed to in the school setting where you're writing on paper and it takes you way too long to do simple things, where your brain is firing it, you know, a million miles an hour. You have to sit there and write it with a pencil, and it's horrible.
You have to show your work, etc.
Yeah, and we found too that it was keeping us on our toes, because it seems like really easy for a while, and then he'll start trying to trip you up.
Nice.
You know, he'll start throwing harder stuff at you, and I was getting tricked by it, right? Like, I was like, I would kind of go on autopilot.
Mm.
So I wouldn't read the question carefully enough. And we get it wrong. And if you get it wrong, you don't master it.
Oh.
So it gets very, like, intense if you're into it.
Yeah, it is like a game.
Yeah.
I'm struck by the strength of some of these words here. Like, they shouldn't be doing this, and they're supposed to be doing it. Like, says who?
Yeah, that, like, I was thinking the same thing.
Who is this authority who says, you are only allowed to do this math?
Well, the Great Council.
Right.
Oh, wait, there's no such thing.
Mm.
Is a great council.
It's the elders, isn't it?
Council of Elders? The Great Council of Elders. The Politburo? I don't know. No, I don't know. Maybe there is. The Illuminati.
That's got to be it.
Hey, I don't know.
Hmm.
But, I mean, we also have talked several times on this live show, and I've been talking on my podcast for years, that there was a concerted effort to control the information that was available to people through this schooling system.
Mm-hmm.
That people, you know, did not make the intentions of schooling available to the public, especially, you know, 100 years ago, 110, 120 years ago, when they were trying to plan the industrial future, the economic future of this country. They did not want everyone to be highly educated. They wanted a lot of people to have basic skills, and they didn't tell themselves, they didn't recognize this as some kind of evil plan. They told themselves stories about how this was for the common good. You know, John Dewey, one of the most famous education reformers of the early 20th century, was all about this common good, but also was about, you know, controlling literacy. I mean, he had great rationalizations for why he wanted education to work in certain ways, where people could never reach their potential, but it all had to do with this common good and what was, you know, good for the collective, what was good for industry and the economy. So, but I'm just going to read a couple more paragraphs of this, and then I want to talk about some of the criticisms.
Yes.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. That's where this is all going. So, but last November, Thordson, did I call her Thompson before? That's some bad reading on my part. Cammy Thordson, Thordson is the name of the teacher. Thordson began using Khan Academy in her class. Khan Academy is an educational website that, as the tagline puts it, aims to let anyone learn almost anything for free. Students, or anyone interested enough to surf by, can watch some 2,400 videos in which the site's founder, Salman Khan, chattily discusses principles of math, science, and economics, with a smattering of social science topics thrown in. The videos are decidedly lo-fi, even crude. Generally 7 to 14 minutes long, they consist of a voiceover by Khan describing a mathematical concept or explaining how to solve a problem while his hand-scribed formulas and diagrams appear on screen. Like the Wizard of Oz, Khan never steps from behind the curtain to appear in a video himself. It's just Khan's voice and some scrawly equations. In addition to these videos, the website offers software that generates practice problems and rewards good performance with video game-like badges for answering a streak of questions correctly, say, or mastering a series of algebra levels. Carpenter has acquired 52 Earth badges in math, which require hours of toil to attain and at which his classmates gaze with envy and awe. Now, we're not like crazy about these rewards, right? So I think hopefully it isn't sapping someone's interest actually in the subject just because they want to collect little things. I could see that happening. What do you guys think?
People go to a lot of trouble to collect little things that are worth nothing.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to give yourself trivial little goals to help you do things. Like when you go to work out or something, right?
Yeah.
You're like, okay, if I do all these exercises, then I'll eat a Butterfinger.
If you're creating them for yourself and not letting somebody else tell you that they're important, I think it could be valuable. This is School Sucks Live 843. Join SSP. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody. This is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks Live. With me tonight, Corey and Osborne. We've been talking about self-teaching, specifically using a website called Khan Academy. I've been getting into Khan Academy for the last few weeks with an 11-year-old who wanted to expand her math skills, sharpen up some of her existing skills, and get introduced to some new concepts. And we found this to be an incredibly effective way to do this. Now, like I said before, I want to reiterate this. If you are not interested in math, Khan Academy is not magical. I think that from what I saw from my experience using this site, it has ways to take advantage of somebody's intrinsic motivation to I don't want to really say that it's rewards based, but it does offer little knickknacks. And in the video game world, this is
a huge deal.
Why is that, Corey?
I don't know. I've just been thinking about it the whole time we were on break. And like, you know, this thing that happened in the latest generation of video game consoles where they create arbitrary goals, like kill this many of this enemy in such and such a fashion, something very specific that usually you have to go out of your way to do. And I I myself have spent a lot of time going out of my way to do certain things just to get a little tag that says you did this. It doesn't do anything, doesn't really accomplish anything for you. It's just bragging rights, really.
I wonder if this comes from school.
I don't know.
Because these things have no point.
No point.
It's just a thing.
It's a bragging rights thing with the video games anyway, because all the achievements, as they call them, that you get have a certain points value attached to them, and you have a total gamer score, they call it, on Xbox anyway, where underneath your name online shows the total point value of all the achievements you've gotten. So
yeah. So think about the game creator and their motivation, right? So they're trying to get you to play the game longer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So and it's very easy for them to create these tasks for you to achieve. There's no extra programming that's required for them.
Right.
Right.
Or a very little.
Yeah. So it's kind of like what the school people are doing.
Ah, it does seem similar.
Well,
let's create brainless activities to waste people's time to keep them in the game longer.
Ah, yeah. We are going to take a call. 754. You are on School Sucks Podcast. Who's this? How can we help you?
Hey, Brett. It's Mel again. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Hey, pretty good. Just wanted to give you a link on the subject of how video games keep you addicted. It was published by Cracked.com. 5 Creepy Ways Video Games Are Trying to Get You Addicted.
Oh, I've seen
that. I remember that one, yes.
And what do you make of it, Mel?
Well, just basically using like the reward system, everything that's been, I guess, known about the human psychology, but just like the reward, kind of like the Skinner box again.
Yeah.
But they implement every aspect of the game to give you like reward, just to keep you, I guess one of their goals was to keep you playing even when you weren't having fun.
That's interesting, too. And is it suggested that this is trying to build on or take advantage of the way people are miseducated? Does it go that far? Or can that just be assumed? Because people have these habits. They're incredibly unnatural. They are unrewarding. Maybe even, you know, certainly in the long term, unsatisfying, right? Like, Corey, you know more about this than me. Is there any long-term satisfaction? Like, oh, good thing I collected that stuff.
No, the worst offenders in the video game world, anyway, would be like the massively multiplayer online games like World of Warcraft.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Things like that, where people start playing these things, and it's all ultimately pointless. And it's just a lot of fun at first, but it gets to the point where you're spending, like, it becomes a full-time job to really keep up with this like rat race that they've manufactured, and it's really easy for people to get sucked into it. Like, people's lives just disappear until they have to stop playing completely because it's wrecking their life.
There was another article about this too called Rewards for Suffering. Are you familiar with that? Where it kind of explored this game, I think specifically focused on World of Warcraft and explored the impact that it can have on a person's.
And it's all about getting you to stay signed in longer and to not cancel your account. And it's mostly just, it's not even hardship that they put you through. It's just tedium.
Yeah.
Well, there's like this sunk cost fallacy going on there too, right? Where you can't just stop because, oh no, I've invested all this time and I haven't finished it. I haven't accomplished these things.
Right.
And if I just quit, then it will all be for naught.
Yeah.
Yeah. They actually implement a punishment if you stop. Like, if you stop at a certain point, you lose the last 30 or 1 hour gameplay. You would have to do it all over. So it's that's part of like one of the ways to get you addicted.
So do you have any personal experience with this?
Yeah, too many video games hours logged in.
Yeah.
Doing what games?
Mostly online shooters.
Okay. And I know nothing about this. I mean, I was real into this when I was a kid. Like, and I know I could get real into it again. I got hooked into this game called Plants vs. Zombies.
That's a phenomenal game.
But it's the most pointless game.
But, you know, it has a lot. I mean, all video games are ultimately pointless.
Yeah.
But at least it has an end. It's not like something like World of Warcraft, which I used to play.
See, it doesn't have an end.
But you will get bored of it much sooner than you will.
I don't know. Because let me tell you.
It'll happen all of a sudden one day, I guarantee you. Because I played that game nonstop for weeks.
I'll tell you about what I've had going on recently. I have to spend a lot of time over the course of the week, like editing our live show, cutting up video, all that stuff. But I can't just sit there and stare at the video screen. I have to have something occupying my mind while I'm doing this. But I can't like start watching something else or listening to something else because I have to be watching and listening to us to edit it. And so Plants vs. Zombie is pointless because it's kind of mindless. So it fills that void of just like doing something with my exam. Something else needs to be going on here.
Mm-hmm.
So there is this puzzle called Vase Breaker, mm-hmm. where you break the vases where all the zombies
and
are.
Either a plant will come out or a zombie will come out.
Yeah. And you got to set up the plants to kill the zombies before they go into your back porch.
Right.
After doing this for about 15 minutes, I'm like, I'm so bored of this. I'm tired. I close it, right? I've gotten past 24 screens of this, so I'm pretty good at it. But then, like a half an hour later, it's calling to me again. The zombies, you know, or the plants. And I have to go back. I have to try it again.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I think this is one of the reasons why people get so into adult entertainment. You know? Like, if they have to sit around at their desk all day.
Might as well watch some adult entertainment.
I think so, because, like, if you are at your desk for work, work isn't always the best. You know, it's not always the most saddest, like sending emails, replying to emails, you know, doing Excel spreadsheets. If you have that kind of work from home job, you could a little bit of porn would really break up the day, I think.
I think it would.
So, but that's kind of another thing, too, is this easy entertainment, you know, this cheap stimulation that people don't want to. I found this with myself anyway. People don't want to work incredibly hard to not be bored. You know, they want something to just, they don't want to create their own activity. They want other people to entertain them. And I think that this comes from school as well. And, or it can.
Sure.
But I think that we always talk about this dichotomy between like the state and the education system and the market. But the fact that most people have been educated in these government schools, I think has distorted the market in all kinds of ways. And we talked about people accepting crappier service, people accepting crappier products, not asserting themselves, not saying what they want, not commununating what they deserve for the money that they pay. Of course, it goes the other way, too. Maybe some people don't want to do anything and still want to get stuff.
Right. Some people don't want to pay for services and still get them. And they know exactly how to squeeze those people who were, you know, trained to conform and get along with everyone and be obedient.
Right.
By just, you know, bullying them.
So, Mill, any thoughts on Khan Academy?
I've watched a few videos, and they were really helpful.
Really?
But other than that, yeah.
Did you learn anything?
Yeah. Well, it was like refreshing my memory from just kind of like a hobby, you know.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, it's kind of like what's neat about the internet, which is a form of entertainment, is that you can get into so many different subjects and topics. It's like a 10-month.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you very much for your call. And this is School Sucks Live.
One more thing.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm going to add, I mean, isn't all entertainment eventually just mindless? I mean, what would be the difference if we're all watching the Heat game right now?
That's a good point. Thanks for your call, Emil. School Sucks Live, 843-JOIN-SSP. Give us a call. We'll be right back.
More School Sucks is coming up next, live after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
Hey, everybody. This is School Sucks Live. I am Brett, and we are back for hour two. We'd love to hear from you tonight. Our number is 843-JOIN-SSP. You can Skype in School Sucks Live, all one word. If you are listening to us at LRN.FM, I recommend maybe open a new tab and type in SchoolSucksProject.com and click on Live in the main nav bar, and you can watch us do the show, which I think is a neat feature. Not too many people are doing this.
No, they are not.
And
I don't know why. Maybe it's gotten old. I don't know. I you know, I used to, way back in the day, watch the Free Talk Live show through the cam, and then just gradually I got to where I didn't do that anymore.
But that's different. They just have a cam of them doing a radio show. You know, like the camera doesn't change. There's no graphics. There's, you know, it's nothing happens during the commercial breaks, and that's fine.
Yeah, we have some production value.
We do have some production value. And if you look at us now, what it looks like in here, Dale has done a lot of just amazing work. He's invested a lot in the studio. It looks good in here. It's lit well in here. I've invested a lot of money from subscribers in this project. And I'm really happy with how things are going. We are actually running three cameras tonight. One of them had to be non-HD. That's how it works with Ustream. You can't do three HD at once. So we have two HD and one SD cam. But you should see this because... Go ahead.
I'm sorry. And we provide you entertainment during the commercials.
Yeah. When LRN goes to commercials, I hope this is okay to say, but I play just random videos. Tonight I've been playing a playlist of... School Sucks podcast video previews, and a couple of those previews show some webcam footage of the live shows that we were doing when we were filling some of Gardner's time slots, and it was a mess in here. It was dark.
It was.
We all look, you know, very dismal. So come check out how we look now. I mean, I think that this is a big improvement. I'm really happy with it. I think things are moving in the right direction. We spent most of the first hour talking about mathematics, self-teaching, Khan Academy. Still have to press on with that story because while Khan Academy is a very positive trend and a very useful resource for certain people, it is not very popular with some of the public school teachers and administrators.
I wonder why.
First thing,
I can't imagine.
We are going to take a call. This is from 773. You are on School Sucks Live. Who's this?
Hi, my name is Sam.
Hi, Sam.
I have no idea what you guys are talking about because I had to stop listening when I started calling.
Oh, yeah. Well, you been listening to the show before that?
I was listening for a couple of minutes. I was actually at an open mic night playing some music, and then I got in my car and started listening on my way home. So I heard about one call and some commercials.
Well, what would you like to talk about, Sam?
Basically wanted to just tell you about my current life situation and get your input on it. Basically, my boyfriend wants to be a teacher, and I'm trying to figure out a very gentle way to let him know that this is maybe not the best idea.
Well, what does he want to teach, and what is his rationalization for this? And what do you know? I mean, how much do you know about what we do? I mean, have you heard School Sucks podcast before?
Yeah, I've been listening for a couple of months now, and I'm currently reading a lot of John Taylor Gatto and stuff. I got interested because I have a 3-year-old son, and I was trying to figure out what I was going to do with him for school. I always knew that I wasn't going to send him to public school, but I was kind of about maybe private school, and now I'm definitely sure that I'm going to homeschool. So anyways, my boyfriend was planning on being a cop when I met him, and I'm really glad that changed because I don't know that I would be dating him anymore if that were the case.
Right.
I guess the next step would be priest then. No?
Why priest after cop?
Well, no.
Well,
I mean,
cop then teacher.
He's on teacher now. I'm right. Saying priest will be next.
Okay.
Oh dear God.
So you moved him away. You moved him away from. Did he come to this decision on his own, or did it take any encouragement from you to move away from this idea of being a cop?
He pretty much came to it on his own. I mean, I think that it was definitely a result of meeting me and being with me. But yeah, I definitely didn't pressure him or anything. But I think that he came to the decision that he wanted to be a teacher because of being with me, and he realized that he was really good with kids because he is just absolutely fantastic with my son.
Yeah.
So he was like, hey, here's a career I can do. You know, I like kids. I can teach kids. So he wants to be an elementary school teacher, which I think is fantastic. Like, his reasoning is that, you know, he wants to help kids and all that. And I think that his motives are really great, but he just doesn't see school the way that I see it.
And have you tried to have any dialogue or introduce any of these stuff, like School Sucks podcast, John Taylor Gatto? Have you tried to go over any of that with him?
I have done that a little bit, but he's stubborn, which yeah. I understand, because I'm really stubborn too, and I tend to like not want to come to a new conclusion unless I come to it on my own, and I feel like he's kind of the same as me in that. So, like, I got the John Taylor Gatto's Ultimate History Lesson, and I watched that, and he watched like little chunks of it with me, but he didn't get really into it. And every now and then, we actually listened to the show that was Stefan Molyneux and Laurette Lynn talking about school and stuff. And at one point, they said one thing about how, you know, teachers were just in it for the money and the pensions and stuff. And he got kind of offended and annoyed with it and just like left and stopped listening. And I was like, oh God, you know, what am I going to do now? He really did not enjoy that. He's not a fan of Laurette Lynn at all. I mean, if I put on her podcast, he is gone.
Have you ever tried Free Talk Live?
Not really, no.
Because I think one way that I've found, just put on Free Talk Live when you're in the car, and it's just kind of background noise, and something interesting happens or something catches your attention, and they go over a variety of different topics. If he also wanted to be a cop at some point, maybe you could spark his interest through one of the things that they're talking about, on the show any given night. I think Free Talk Live is better for beginners. I mean, Stefan Molyneux is a guy, you either love him or you can't stand him. Right. I think a lot of people who are ready to hear that stuff are very receptive to his message, to his style. But if you're not ready to hear that stuff, you are going to use everything, like Stefan Molyneux's style of presentation, his intonations, his accents, his baldness, whatever you can find to say, I'm not interested in this at all. So, if somebody is not ready to hear that kind of stuff, I think Stefan Molyneux is very confronting and effective in how he does so. And that, the more people have to face the truth and find themselves in a position where they can't rationalize or talk their way out of it, they're either going to, throw up their hands and say, yeah, I have to accept it. But 99 right. times out of 10, what they're going to do is say, this is crap, you know, and they're going to reject it and they're going to run away from it.
Well, he's got a lot riding on it, too. I mean, you know, this is basically his career path going away if he starts to open up to these concepts, which is difficult. But I think he's moving in the right direction. Like, he went from wanting to be a cop to wanting to be something more constructive,
right?
You know, which is a teacher, which I think, you know, he's got some momentum in the right direction going.
But he's still interested in the idea of, you know, working for the state. He still sees that as noble work. Is that fair to say?
Well, I mean, not necessarily, because he doesn't want to work for a public school. He did like an observation day where he went to a Montessori school, and he came home and he told me about how great it was and how smart the kids were and how, you know, their learning was so self-directed, and they got to choose what they were working on and everything.
Hey, can you hang on the line? Can you hang on the line and we'll bring you back and we can continue this conversation in a couple minutes?
Sure.
Okay, this is School Sucks Live. We'll be right back.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to School Sucks Live. We are kind of all over the place tonight. We started out talking about Khan Academy self-teaching. I was telling a story about a student that I was working with here in Manchester and how we used that website to introduce some new math concepts. We still have not gotten into the public school administrators and teachers review. of Khan Academy. But hopefully we will. If we can't do it during the ordinary show, it can certainly happen during the after show. My co-hosts tonight, Corey and Osborne, and we are into hour two. We have Sam on the phone. Sam, you said you were listening to us in your car?
Yes.
Really? How did you catch us? On satellite radio?
No, I've got the TuneIn app on my phone.
Oh, cool, cool. All right, so you're listening to LRN.FM.
Right.
Okay, great. So here's where we're at. Sam called in, and she is telling us a story about her boyfriend who is entertaining the idea of going into public school to be an elementary teacher, correct?
Right.
And he does not, so far anyway, seem incredibly receptive to some of the materials that you've tried to bring to him as far as, you know, showing him that maybe this is not the best path if he's really interested in having a positive impact on the lives of children. And you've tried, what did you say, John Taylor Gatto, who else, Sam?
And one of the Laurette Lynn and Fawn Molyneux together.
I feel like it's my responsibility to ask, why not School Sucks Podcast?
Well, I started listening to you a little bit recently, and actually, I really like any time that I'm cleaning house and stuff, listening to podcasts, I've been listening to you a lot, and he has said that he likes you a lot better than Laurette Lynn. That's something.
Yeah.
I find that, generally speaking, people will like me the best. So,
well, I will admit that the early episodes of School Sucks were very influential on me when my best friend had been trying to, you know, get me to talk about and understand liberty as, you know, as we understand it, as I understand it now. But I just wasn't receptive to it because sometimes paradoxically, it's hard to hear such a thing from someone you're that close to.
Yeah, it's really very difficult to try and talk about these things with family. It always seems to go almost nowhere. The conversations become very emotional and unproductive. And I think that there is a real trick, Sam. I think you've described this a little bit. You got to get him to hear it from somebody else. You know, I don't know what it is. Like, so many things in our personal lives, like if I was in a relationship with somebody and, well, I mean, I'm different, but I'm just thinking about any point in my life, you know, even when I was like a stubborn 21-year-old, if somebody said to me in a very sort of non-threatening and constructive way, have you thought about doing this? Or have you ever looked into this? You know, I would at least, I think I would say, yeah, thank you. That's a good idea. You know, if it was something that I recognized might be enriching or helpful or productive at the time. But in this area, that just doesn't happen. It is too clouded with emotion. And is that kind of what you're finding? Do these conversations ever become confrontations for you?
A little bit. I mean, definitely after the time we were listening to that show that I mentioned and he got really offended by it. But at the time, I felt that it was really urgent. Because, oh, Jesus, maybe now.
What's that?
He didn't want to take a break in school, and he just got his associate.
Yeah.
He was going to continue in school and go to get his bachelor's or whatever, but we're about to move out of state, and in order to get the lower tuition, he has to wait a year to continue school. So at this point, it's like a big sigh of relief for me, like, oh, God, thank God I have a year, you know, okay, fine.
Sam, I have an idea. I don't know how you feel about this. I'm going to let you go because your cell phone is a little spotty. So I don't know what time you're going to be home or if you're going to be seeing this gentleman tonight. Is that true? Will you be with
him? Yeah, we live together.
We will be here probably till about 1 a.m. Eastern time. If you get home and you want to throw this on, our video feed is at schoolsucksproject.com/live. You can watch us and maybe suggest to him that after midnight, the two of you should call the show.
All right. Well, we'll see about that. I'll try.
And if not tonight, we're here every Thursday. We'll be broadcasting next Thursday from Porkfest. But yeah, you're just in and out a little bit, and I would definitely like to continue the conversation at a point in the future. So after midnight, when we're doing the after show, I might like to talk to him, and I don't want it to be like a gang up, like, you know, four people who are like-minded on this issue against one. But there might be a way that we can do that. So make that suggestion. Maybe at least expose him to this for a few minutes. And I'd like to hear his thoughts. I'd like to talk to him. But thank you very much for the call. And I definitely look forward to hearing from you in the future, maybe even the near future.
All right. Well, thank you. I'll definitely call back sometime.
All right, Sam. Take care.
Now, before the break, Sam started talking about how this gentleman went and visited a Montessori school and evidently was very impressed with it and the self-directedness of the learning. So, which leads me to believe that she's already got this dude going down the right path. I don't know that there's any intervening that she really needs to be really concerned about.
Yeah. I think that if you're around the right people and they're bringing this stuff up, it's a healthy relationship. It's going to happen.
Yeah, I think.
But I think the more you try to make it happen, the less it's likely to happen.
And this is kind of a crucial time, too. You know, like, 'cause once he
especially since there's a history of this where, oh, you didn't want me to be a cop. Now you don't want me to be a teacher. Now, you know.
Yeah. Now you don't want to be a public school teacher. Now you don't want me to be a Montessori school teacher. Now.
But once it does happen, like if he gets certified in these public schools, it's over. Mm-hmm. You really, we've.
She already said that it sounds like he's not really interested in the public school thing.
Okay, well then I think that that's good news.
Yeah. So like I said, I think he's going down the right way. If he keeps progressing down that, going through the teacher path, you know, he'll figure it out.
But we don't know who else is influencing him too. You know, like we don't know. I mean, if he wanted to be a cop, what are his influences? And we can't really speculate on that too much, I guess. But if he, you know, decides that he wants credentials for teachers, for being a teacher, he might get pushed into that. He might get, no, don't listen to silly radicals about the public schools. Schools are great, you know, it might not. But people also really are into what experts say. And Sam might not be considered an expert by him on this subject.
I consider Sam an expert.
She sounded like she knew what she was talking about to me. This is School Sucks Live, 843. Join SSP. Skype in School Sucks Live. We'd love to hear from you. We got plenty of time left. We'll be right back. Everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks Live. Still have plenty of time tonight for your call. If you want to make it, the number is 1-843-JOIN-SSP. And in this segment, I want to pick this con story back up. I was reading an article from Wired Magazine. It was called How Khan Academy is Changing the Rules of Education. We talk about how this had been implemented in a fifth grade class. So we had gotten to a point where they had given a couple case studies, and I want to just skip ahead a little bit here, talking about what happened in Thordson's fifth grade class. The result is that Thordson students move at their own pace. Those who are struggling get surgically targeted guidance, while advanced kids like Carpenter rocket far ahead. Once they're answering questions without making mistakes, Khan's site automatically recommends new topics to move on to. Over half the class is now tackling subjects like algebra and geometric formulas. And even the less precocious kids are improving. Only 3% of her students were classified as average or lower at the end of the year tests, down from 13% at mid-year. For years, teachers like Thordson have complained about the frustrations of teaching to the middle of the class. They stand at the whiteboard trying to get 25 or more students to learn the same stuff at the same pace. And of course, it never really works. Advanced kids get bored and tune out. Lagging ones get lost and tune out. And pretty soon, half the class isn't paying attention. Since the rise of personal computers in the early 80s, educators have hoped that technology could solve this problem by offering lessons tailored to each kid. Schools have blown millions, maybe billions, of dollars on sophisticated classroom technology, but the effort has been in vain. And we still see this segregation by age, which is a real issue.
I hate that.
Also from Prussia, from our Prussian vaters in the field of education. This is Bismarck in his gymnasium schools, and he wanted people to be organized by age so they would have a better chance of forming these brotherly bonds that would make them into good, you know, platoons of soldiers.
Yeah, it's funny how they talk about, you know, advanced kids getting bored, tuning out, kids who are not as advanced getting lost and tuning out because of that. The thing is, even when they do recognize that a kid is having difficulty or that he's, you know, more advanced than the rest of the students in the class, it never really seems to make a difference.
No, but they do talk the talk.
Yeah.
And I've sat through a lot of these meetings in schools, and they talk about accommodations and modifications and individualized plans. They're very good at the talk. What they're bad at is those things in reality. Nothing ever really happens. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't situations in schools and teachers and guidance counselors who aren't committed to doing this, who can't, you know, cater to the needs of these kids, the individual needs of these kids. But for the most part, I never saw it happening. And I saw anybody who wasn't fitting into that middle being labeled pretty much as like, defective is more a label for the kids who are lagging behind, you know, but something's wrong with you if you're not in this middle, because this is where everyone is. This is where you're supposed to be.
Well, I always remember that, like, when I would take standardized tests as a kid in school and they would get the results back, and I would be in fourth grade and get results on these standardized tests back that say Corey reads at a 10th grade reading level, and didn't matter. It didn't mean anything. I still had to go on reading the same fourth grade stuff that all the other kids were reading.
Right, exactly. And I think that for most of school, I probably lagged a little bit behind. I didn't even know I was smart until I was in college. It's frustrating on both ends. And I just wasn't interested in what was going on in school. It's like, this is a terrible misuse of my time at this age. There's such better things I could be doing. So this article so far has talked about some praise for Khan, but it goes on. Not everyone agrees. Critics argue that Khan's videos and software encourage uncreative, repetitive drilling and leave kids staring at screens instead of interacting with real live teachers.
Up until the bit about real live teachers, this was really a case of the pot calling the kettle black.
Yeah, no kidding. Even Khan will acknowledge that he's not an educational professional. He's just a nerd who improvised a cool way to teach people things. And for better or worse, this means that he doesn't have a consistent, comprehensive plan for overhauling school curricula. And if you want to be taken seriously,
you've got to have a plan.
You've got to be a central planner.
You have to have everything figured out.
Pretend that you know what's good for everybody and then write it down on paper and force it on people. That's how you get taken seriously.
Speaking of taking someone seriously, how can you take these complainers seriously when they're saying, hey, so I realize you've got this way of teaching kids 2 years worth of material in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But at what cost?
You're not doing it right. I mean, come on. Like, who cares how it is? I mean, so even if you had to get a finger chopped off. I mean, isn't.
Yeah, yeah.
You're giving someone 2 years of their freaking life back, man.
And it's exactly like what that criticism is. It's like, yes, you've discovered a way that this could be like individualized for everybody, and it's far more efficient and it takes far less time, but it's basically just as crappy as what I do.
Yes.
So it's bad, you know. That's a really weak criticism of this.
No, and what they're really saying is, oh well, you're costing a union brother his job.
Exactly. That is what they are saying.
It's funny how much you can take their exact method and tweak it just slightly. So it's this, you know, it's basically the same boring stuff, but now you do it at your own pace. You just make that one little change and they hate it.
Yeah. I want to just take out one selection from this article, and we can talk about this, and then maybe we can move on to something else. This was actually what was sent to me about a year ago. It was pulled out and posted on cato@liberty.org. This is an excerpt from the article. Even if Khan is truly liberating students to advance at their own pace, it's not clear that the schools will be able to cope with all this advancement and individualization of the educational experience. I added that last part. The very concept of grade levels implies groups of students moving along together at an even pace. So what happens when, using Khan Academy, you wind up with a kid in the fifth grade who has mastered high school trigonometry and physics, but is still functioning like a regular 10-year-old when it comes to writing, history, and social studies? Khan's programmer, Ben Kamens, has heard from teachers who've seen Khan Academy presentations and loved the idea, but wondered whether they could modify it to, quote, this is what we've been building to, quote, stop students from becoming this advanced, unquote.
Yeah.
That's one of those things where they just really accidentally completely shot down their own constant argument of, you know, for the children.
Yeah. So, you know, because I agree with where this paragraph is going when it starts. How will these schools be able to cope? They won't. Except the writer thinks that that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
Where I think right. that's the entire freaking point.
Yeah. How will people who put shoes on horses be able to cope with the invention of automobiles? Right. It's the same kind of idea that we're being dragged. The fact that this is an institution that uses force, it just drags us is a drag on the advancement of, you know, an entire society. And because things can't change because they're not ready, because they haven't figured out how to be parasites in a new world.
Never mind. Maybe we'll talk about that when we come back.
Sure. This is School Sucks Live, 843 Join SSP. You can Skype in School Sucks Live. We got plenty of time for your call if you want to make it. We'll be right back. Welcome back to School Sucks Podcast. This is our last segment of the regular show. With me tonight, Corey. Corey, thank you so much for being here.
You're very welcome.
And Osborne, thank you as well.
Hi. No problem. Anytime.
You've got a birthday coming up.
I do.
It's tomorrow.
In 15 minutes.
And we are going to devote some time on the after show to celebrating.
Excellent.
So,
what shall we do?
Well, we'll talk about birthdays.
All right.
And, you know, birthday memories.
Birthday suits.
Birthday wishes.
Presents. We'll talk about presents.
Yeah. Yeah. So tonight on the show, we've done this comparison between how things are and just this glimpse of how things could be. If more people were not only aware of these ideas, now plenty of people are aware of Khan Academy. And Khan Academy is obviously not some kind of panacea. The problem of government education, but it's one thing, you know, for maybe one group of people with one or two or three interests that could be completely revolutionary and has been revolutionary. And I just spent a month of my life watching what it could do. We just finished pulling a quote out of this article. The Khan programmer Ben Kamens had received a criticism. How can it stop students from becoming so advanced? And this really exposes what the government school not is all about, but one of the things that it is about today, which is jobs for bureaucrats, right? Because we talked about this just takes way longer than it needs to take to give people the skills that they have at the end. And I mean, that's like saying that it's all good. There's so much damage and misinformation in that as well. So, another piece of this, first thing I said we would do is we would just do a little sample. We would see what a con video is like, and then maybe we can critique it. And this is on solving for a variable, so very, very basic algebra. And here's con.
Solve P equals 2L plus 2W for L. So this right here, this is just the formula for the perimeter of a rectangle. Perimeter is equal to 2 times the length plus 2 times the width. But they just want us to solve this equation right here, solve for L. So let's do that. So we have P is equal to 2 times.
And he writes on the board as he goes. He's got a little, what is that called, Corey?
Some kind of a draw tablet, an online whiteboard program.
Yeah, yeah. So he's got a problem written on there. It says solve P for 2L plus 2W. Sounds kind of engaging so far. I mean, these are very, very simple videos. But let's pick it back up.
L plus 2 times W. So we need to solve for L. So let's isolate all of the L terms on one side. And the best way we can just do that by leaving it here on the right and then getting rid of this 2W. And the best way to get rid of the 2W is to subtract it from the right. But if you're going to subtract it from the right, you also have to subtract it from the left if you want this equality to hold. So you have to also subtract it from the left. And so the left-hand side becomes P minus 2W. P minus 2W, and the right-hand side, you get this 2W minus 2W cancels out. You just have a 2L. And then if you want to solve for L, you just have to divide both sides of this equation by 2. You just divide both sides of this equation by 2, and we have isolated our L. We get L is equal to P minus 2W over 2, or if we wanted to write it the other way, we could write L is equal to P minus 2W over 2, and we are done.
Well, it's kind of like what happens in school, only a lot faster.
Sure. Yeah, or slower, if you need it to be slower.
Yeah.
And you can repeat it as many times as you might want to.
And we were talking...
Right, without the rest of the class groaning every time you raise your hand.
Yeah, now, I think it was the student that I was working with today, we were talking about Khan Academy, and she was telling me that... The genesis of this was he was just making these little videos to explain things to like his nieces and nephews who were younger and were struggling in school. And he would put the videos on YouTube and they could watch them, you know, even though they were far away. And I guess at the same time, he was tutoring somebody who he was also making the videos for in person. And this student said, I like the videos. You know, I'd rather do the videos. Because you're not at the mercy of somebody else when you're watching the videos. They mm-hmm. can be as fast or as slow as you want, just like this entire website can be, which is one of the things that I really like about it. You know, Bill Gates put a little bit of money behind this.
Really?
Yeah, like $1.5 million.
That's a little bit of money.
Yeah. Well,
it's for Bill Gates.
Yeah, definitely a little bit of money for Bill Gates. But if there are no more thoughts or calls on Khan Academy, I just want to go to one more public school topic before we wrap up the show tonight. This is from Marginal Revolution. It is called Teachers Don't Like Creative Students.
Oh, that's my buddy Alex Tabarrok.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Yeah, he's from George Mason.
Oh, and is he an economist? Or
yes, he is.
Excellent. So I just thought this was interesting. I'm going to read some of this and we can discuss it for a minute. And if it goes into our after show, that's certainly fine. So teachers don't like creative students. One of the most consistent findings in educational studies of creativity has been that teachers dislike personality traits associated with creativity. Research has indicated that teachers prefer traits that seem to run counter to creativity, such as conformity and unquestioning acceptance of authority. And then there's a bunch of sources cited. The reason for teachers' preferences is quite clear. Creative people tend to have traits that some have referred to as obnoxious. Torrance, which is one of the studies, described creative people as not having the time to be courteous, as refusing to take no for an answer, and as being negativistic and critical of others. Other characteristics, although not deserving of the label of noxious, nonetheless, may not be those most highly valued in the classroom. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, I mean, I used to teach classrooms of 10 kids, 12 kids, and if one of them wanted to do his own thing, this was definitely back in the day for me, but that was very disruptive. And I mean, I was stuck in this thing early in my career too, where, you know, we had to keep moving along and everybody just had to fit that mold. So you could see how this relates to our last story, that there is a tremendous amount of pressure on teachers. I think a lot of it they're putting on themselves, but, you know, they're not the ones running the show in those schools. They feel like, you know, they have authorities that they have to answer to as well. And it's a very obedient profession. So I'm just going to read a little more here. Research has suggested that traits associated with creativity may not only be neglected, but actively punished. Stone, another study, found that second graders who scored highest on tests of creativity were also those identified by their peers as engaging in the most misbehavior. Given that research and theory suggest that a supportive environment is important to the fostering of creativity, it is quite possible that teachers are, perhaps unwittingly, extinguishing creative behaviors. And I think that this creativity and individuality would, you know, right with curiosity, would lead to a lot of questions if it was maintained, if it wasn't crushed as kids get into middle school, where adults are not so impressive as they once were. They're no longer three times your size. It is not magical that they can drive a car or cook your food. And they become far less impressive.
I think, it's not a surprise that, you know, studies find this is the case. I mean, you know, anybody that doesn't, you know, kind of toe the line or, you know, sit down, shut up and do what you're told is going to cause problems for the teacher. And it's not because teachers are mean. It's because teachers have an impossible job to do, which is to get 30 kids or however many are in the class to learn the same thing at the same pace. So,
yeah,
it's not just, isn't it? I'm not unnecessarily trying to vilify teachers there. I'm just saying they have a really impossible job and they just don't have time.
Yeah. And of course they blame the students for being put in this impossible situation,
right,
in this nonsensical system. They kind of wind up blaming the students.
And they, I mean, I could see very easily how they could end up resenting the kids who don't, you know, don't just fit into the mold.
Absolutely.
They don't like smart kids either. It's not just creative kids.
Right.
It's like kids who test well, they hate those.
Well, I wonder how many of these negative characteristics would come out if they were in a more productive environment.
We are going to continue this discussion in about 5 minutes at schoolsucksproject.com/live. We're going to take a quick break, and then you can watch our after show, the After School Sucks special. I hope you'll stick with us, and I hope you'll consider giving us a call. But for right now, we are off LRN. Thank you very much for listening. And take care. We'll see you next week, if not in a couple minutes, at one more time, schoolsucksproject.com/live.